and a very occasional glance up to judge the position of the sun. It was sinking lower in the sky, although the heat at this point was still harsh, beating down hard. He swallowed through a phlegm-blocked and dried throat.
Soon be dark. Not soon enough for me. Too exposed out here in the day.
What you moaning about, man? We don't have to fight them. We see a party coming, we just turn tail and head back with the information, covering our asses on the way. Shit, they can't ambush us out in this desert, can they?
Blake shook his head.
Nearer we are to them, the more tired we are, and the fresher they are. Get that through your jolt fuck skull and think about it.
Jack silently agreed with the older sec man. They were beaten down by the sun and weary from the journey. It was possible that an outrunning mutie party could catch them up and force a stand before they reached the main war party. On the other hand, so far there had been no sign of any activity. With luck, the Sun Children were still licking their wounds from the previous day's firefight. It was only when he looked up and saw the pall of smoke seemingly rising from the earth that Jack realized how well protected the Valley of the Sun Children was. On their previous, dark-shrouded excursion, he hadn't realized that the sudden dip of the valley, almost a hollow crater, made the villain visible on three of its four sides. They were approaching obliquely, Blake leading them out in a southwesterly direction so that they couldn't be seen from the gentle incline that formed one side of the valley and serviced the only road into the ville. The twins had fallen silent as they drew nearer, their attention becoming more focused on their task. It was eerily silent, despite the nearby presence of the ville. The bowl of the valley acted as a sound barrier, and kept the sound contained within its natural walls. Blake indicated for the twins to spread out to his left, and for Jack to move across to the right.
I just want us to have a look-see what they might be doing down there. Don't do anything to attract their attention, for fuck's sake. We just want them to go about their business, see what they're about, then get the hell back to the main party.
Ant ran his hand lovingly along the barrel of his newly cleaned shotgun.
Why can't we just give them a little taste, dude?
Blake shot him a warning glance.
I know you boys got a reason to hate the muties, but there's still just four of us. We can't keep them all down there until the others arrive. Besides, Harv wants us to scout out trouble and report back, and he's the boss, right?
The twins didn't answer immediately, so Blake rapped again.
Right?
Guess so.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so let's do it.
Jack moved away from the other three, leaving them in the rapidly darkening light to move around the rim of the valley. Despite the fact that it would have been almost impossible for him to be seen, he still kept low to the ground, moving in a light-footed crouching run that raised little dust from the dry earth around. Dropping to the ground so that he was on all fours, then lowering himself so that he was on his belly, Jack advanced to the lip of the valley. The dust itched on his exposed skin, granules of the dry earth insinuating themselves under his clothes and irritating him. He blinked the dry dust from his eyes, which were itching and raw. The tears ran down his cheeks where his eyes watered. Not content with this, the dust caught in his throat and clogged his already dry mouth. But it was worth it. Anything that cut down the chances of being spotted was worth the effort and discomfort he may have to endure. He could only trust that the twins were doing the same. He knew Blake would be, recognizing another born survivor in the wizened sec man. Jack carefully picked his way over the wire fencing that ran around the top of the valley. He ignored the stench of the rotting bird corpses that were speared on the wire at regular intervals as a deterrent. He had no fear of dead things, only a caution against cutting himself on the wire and letting any infections from the dead creatures enter his bloodstream. He took his time, negotiating the wire carefully. There was no one in sight, and no need to hurry. Once over, he picked up speed once more. As he neared the lip of the valley, the sound increased. Most of it consisted of the everyday sounds of living, amplified and distorted by being trapped within the confines of the valley's bowl. Sound overlapped on sound, so that it was difficult for Jack to pick out individual noises. He was, however, aware that in the mainstream of noise were the sounds of chanting. It was only when he was in a position to look over the lip and down into the valley that the source of the chanting became identifiable. The vast majority of the Sun Children and Sompvogel were going about their business in a manner that changed little, whether norm or muty. Children ran and played, women cooked and made clothes from rags, men fashioned weapons from what was at hand or made tools. But in the center of the ville, something a little out of the ordinary was taking place. The main arena, where Jack and the others had recovered the dead children, was mostly empty. Mostly. A small group of male Sun children was gathered in their bright robes, their assortment of salvaged and homemade knives visible on their makeshift belts. They were chanting along to cues from their leader. Even at such a distance, Jack could see that the Mutie leader now only had the use of one arm, the limb that had been grazed by a blaster shot now limp and possibly gangrenous, covered by a primitive dressing. If it was infected, then Sandvogel would soon lose its leader, which may mean that he figured he had nothing to lose on one last throw of the dice. This notion was amplified by the fact that the Mutie leader was standing in front of the painted and decorated pre-dark nuke, gesturing to it while he led the chanting, as though offering it a prayer. There was nothing in his action to indicate that he knew how to arm and trigger the nuke, or even that its old tech was still operable. But it wasn't a certainty, and Jack's people couldn't depend on anything except certainties. Jack withdrew his head and crawled back from the edge before raising himself from the dust so that he was on all fours rather than flat to the earth. He snorted the dust from his nose and throat, hawking a lump of blackened phlegm onto the ground with a noise that sounded louder for the quietness around. He headed back to the wire and over it. Once more he avoided contact with the insect-crawling bird corpses. Jack would much rather have fought a dozen stickies than an infection. Once over the wire, he looked back to the valley. They were beginning to light fires and lamps down in Sandvogel, and the light reflected up a little way, prevented from spreading out by the enclosed valley. It seemed to form a small dome of light over the valley, a dim beacon in the encroaching dusk. A light they would have to extinguish. Jack heard a low whistle coming from Blake's direction, followed by two more distant replies. For his own part, Jack whistled low, cracked by the dryness of his mouth and throat. He turned and headed back to where he'd left the others, maintaining his crouching run, even though it was almost certain that they were alone along the top of the valley and were safe from observation. Ant and Dee were already with Blake when Jack arrived back. The four men quickly exchanged what they had seen. It all added up to the same thing. Sunchild had something in mind, but there was no immediate attack, and there was no increased guard.
Okay. We head back to the main party. Tell them what we've seen.
They'll be exhausted after coming through in this heat. Maybe Harv will let them rest before the attack. Cool down in the night.
Hell no, boys. You know Harv better than that. He'll just want to go in hell for leather. Hit him hard and hit him fast. Just in case.
Jack kept silent, but wondered why Harvey would want to risk additional losses by sending in people who were tired and not 100% after such a long journey. He suspected it might have something to do with the fact that Alien would, as the fair baron he was, put himself in the front line of the action. The older man would be weary, and Jack knew that he wasn't a good fighter. More than that, the baron had a woman back in Raw who was in some way connected to the sect chief, and to whatever was going on behind that metal door. And just maybe it had something to do with that and with whatever had happened to Dean, because Jack was as certain as could be that the boy wasn't in Sandvogel. All this went through his mind as they began the journey back toward the two-lane blacktop. They had spent almost half an hour on their survey, which meant that the war party should only be about 15 minutes away. If the light had been better, then they could possibly have seen the party advancing. But as it was, the sun had now set, and the cold air closed around Jack like a vice, colder somehow after the intense heat of the day. As they marched back, it was as much the thought of Dean being trapped still in Raw as the fallen temperature that made the albino shiver. There was a blackness like that of a thick blanket placed over Dean, a blackness that enveloped his face, cutting off air as well as light, wrapping itself around his head till it blocked out sound. Blocked out everything, so that the only sense he had of anything around him was the faintest of impressions, muffled in the blackness. But gradually it improved. Gradually things began to filter back. Slowly at first, but then with an increasing speed until the sound became too loud, every last breath from his own body like the rasping of a saw on metal, every step in the room like the pounding of a hammer on a wall. The light became stronger than staring directly into the sun, creeping through his closed eyelids until he screwed his eyes tight. So tight that he felt he would pop his eyeballs back into his forebrain. And the taste, like raw earth and salt, as his own sweat and dust from the air around coated his tongue, matting on his taste buds. The air suddenly came back to him, acrid with sweat and fear, great drafts of air, the slightest breeze like a hurricane in his nostrils. The previous struggle for air, now replaced with a fear that he would drown in the onrush of oxygen. All the time.